Today is November 8th. It's Sunday morning. This is our class in Mishnah, Masechet Brachot, Perek Chet, which is the 8th chapter, Mishnah Vav. And today we're going to have a long session doing things all together without Charuta. So let's read through the Mishnah. Who wants to volunteer to read the Mishnah? Mishnah Vav, at the bottom of page 29 in the edition of Hanukh Albeck. Okay, so just wait until Mr. Galler finds the Mishnah there. It's the one that says Perek Shmini.
Perek Shmini, I have
it. Yes, it does. Okay, so Reuven's going to read the Mishnah for us. Here we go.
Oh, question real quick. Are we going to do what we did before, which is read it and then answer question at the end, or answer as we go?
Well, today we're going to do it differently. We're going to have a large chavrut with everyone together, so I'll do whatever it seems fit to me as the time goes on. Usually we have an hour chavrut session, and then a little bit less than an hour summation session led by me. Okay, so Reuven's on the spot, right? You volunteered?
Ein mevarachim lo al aner, below al habesamim shel goyim, below al haner.
Let's stop there and make sure we understand what we're talking about. So what does it mean?
We don't make a blessing on the candle, the Havdalah candle. And not the nation's spices, fragrances.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not on the near, I'm assuming, of the nations, below besamim shlamesim, and not on the fragrances that are lit over the dead.
Okay, let's stop there. Let's just say a few things. So first of all, everyone should know what the word near means, and what Reuven said is not wrong, but it's a little bit more expansive. So the way you translated the word ner is, you said the light?
The light.
Right? So does anyone know a larger definition of the word ner? In modern Hebrew it certainly means what Reuven said. But in the time of the Tanakh, in the time of the Mishnah, anyone know what a ner is?
Candle.
He said a candle, okay. The light.
Okay.
Right. The ner is really the pottery that holds the oil that you light. So technically the ner is the fixture. Uh-huh. Now in many cases it's used in the sense of the light. But if you remember what we had 2 weeks ago, we had the word or to mean the light. Right? The or is what you light in the ner. The or is what you light in the ner.
The holder.
Yeah, the ner is the holder. Now, again, I'm not denying the fact that there might be cases in which the word ner is used to refer to the holder that is lit. But there might other be times which it just means the basis, the fixture, the cheres, the pottery. Okay. So it says, Ein mevarchim al lo al aner, and there, of course, we notice that often in Mishnaic Hebrew we have the double negative, Ein mevarchim lo. We don't bless not on the ner, but it means just we don't bless on the ner. And we also don't bless on the bisamim of goyim. And here in our text, we have reproduced what's very often found in Mishnaic manuscripts, is that the preposition shel is not a separate word, but it's a prefix, just like she would be a prefix, or just like li would be a prefix, or just like bi or mi would be a prefix. So shel is a prefix. It's the part of the same word. You see that shel la goyim, and it's not shel space goyim. In David, in your text, it might be printed differently.
Right.
But in the better manuscripts of the Mishnah, we find consistently that shel is a prefix, just like other prepositions are a prefix. Okay? So what does it mean, bisamim shelagoyim? It means bisamim that are
come
from goyim. Now what exactly does it mean, come from goyim? We'll have to talk about that a little bit. But at this point, we could just translate it like that. They come from goyim. So since we're talking about Ner and we're talking about Bissamim, obviously what framework, what tekis, what, how do you say tekis in English? Ceremony are we talking about?
Havdalah.
We're talking about Havdalah, all right? Okay, so that was Ein Mevrachim Lo LaNer VeLo LaBissamim Shel Goyim. Whether the Ner or the Bissamim come from Goyim, we'll have to explain later what that means, come from Goyim.
We have Avdei Kochavim, but okay.
In our copy, it's Avdei Kochavim.
Yeah, okay, so let's explain that a little bit. We all have heard a little bit about the fact that many Jewish texts were censored during the Middle Ages. And we have two different types of censorship. We have external censorship and we have self-censorship. External censorship means that the Christian censors literally went over the text and changed things that they found offensive to them. Self-censorship is when the Jewish printers, afraid that the Goyim wouldn't let them print the text, they censored themselves and changed things.
Is it self-censored?
So it's hard to know whether any given text is self-censored or externally censored. Now, the most prevalent type of censorship, whether it's self-censorship or external, is that whenever the text says goyim or nochrim, two different words for non-Jews, very often the Christian censors took offense, even without understanding the context, didn't want anything that talked about them, about goyim, about non-Jews, about nochrim, about foreigners, and therefore they changed it to Ovdei Kochavim, to idol worshippers, reasoning, well, we're not idol worshippers, the Christians are saying, we'll change it to something that leaves us out of it. So most probably in our particular case here, the text should read Goyim, and if you have Ovdei Kochavim, then that's a reflection of a censored manuscript. That's usually the case. It's not 100% clear in every case what the original was. Goyim, Ovdei Kochavim. There might be a case in which it's supposed to say Ovdei Kochavim. But in many cases, it was changed from Goyim or Nochrim to Ovdei Kochavim. It's actually very important to understand the rest of the Mishnah to see that this is specifically Goyim and not Ovdei Kochavim. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's a single phrase.
Ovdei Kochavim, worshippers of Kochavim. That's what you have, yeah. In general, Professor Albeck, when he put out this Mishnah about 40 years ago, he tried to use the best manuscripts of the Mishnah. He did quite a bit of research, whereas other texts that are published usually to take any manuscript without any kind of scientific investigation of the better text. Okay, so we have that much, and then we have this matter of Metim, beginning with the second to last word of the first line that Reuven already read, v'lo al haner v'lo al abisamim shel ametim. Repeating what we just said, but this time it's no longer shel goyim, it's rather shel metim, of the dead. And Reuven, how did you translate that or explain that?
Not on the nair, the clay vessel, hold the oil, and not on the fragrances that are lit, the spices that are lit over the masing, over the dead.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll also get back to that. And now, the third phrase of the Mishnah, beginning with the fifth to the last word on the second line.
Below al haner, below al habesamim shelifnei avoda zara.
Right.
Not on the nair, the clay vessel that holds the oil. Below al habesamim, and on the fragrances, the spices that is lit before the idols. Before the idol.
Right. Oh, so that Reuven said that's those that are lit in for the dead. We didn't explain exactly what that means, but in some sense for the dead. And now Reuven read the same phrase for a third time, Lo la ner v'lo la b'samim, but this time it doesn't say goyim and it doesn't say metim, it says avodah zarah. Mm-hmm. So clearly, the first phrase that in the text I have in front of me was goyim, it shouldn't be Ovdei Kochavim, that would be exactly the same thing as avodah zarah. Even though we might not know what's the difference between goyim and avodah zarah, there could be a difference. we'll have to think about it, but there certainly is no difference between Oved Kochavim and Avodah Zarah. That's exactly the same phrase, interchangeable.
Meaning idol worship.
Meaning idol worship, right.
But it could be Oved Kochavim and Avodah Zarah, where Oved Kochavim are
the people,
and this is the ceremony.
Okay. And exactly, what was your text? Which was it?
Ours was Oved Kochavim.
It was Oved Kochavim, I see. Could be. Okay, now we get to the last phrase.
And we don't make a blessing on the Nair until the light, the flame is, I guess, awakened. Is that right?
That's a phrase that's hard to translate. It means to be used, to be enjoyed, to be utilized, until he will enjoy of the flame.
Does that mean when literally comes up? Or?
No, it's not from the root to come up. It means to enjoy, to use, to utilize. We don't bless on the Nair until he will enjoy its flame. And notice here, it doesn't say, Ein mevarchim al Nair ad shi'oto low, but it uses a different word. Or, because you can't enjoy a Nair. A Nair is just an appliance. It's just a fixture. What you can enjoy is the or that comes up in the Nair. That's why it's two different words here. But in any case, we're talking about the fact that the bracha that we say is over the enjoyment of the flame. We're talking again about Havdalah. Okay, that's a very, very basic reading of it. Let's go through the questions and expand Charuta here and answer them one by one. So I'll read the first question and then we'll take a few minutes to think about it. The first question on the question sheet is, and everyone has the question sheets, How is this Mishnah different? Right, Manishtana. How is this Mishnah different from all the other Mishnayot? Manishtana, Mishnah azo mikola Mishnayot that we have seen so far in this chapter. While you're thinking about that, by going through the whole chapter, right, I'm going to have a bite of my bagel. So don't get the answer too quickly. Look at the whole perek of Mishnah, beginning from the beginning of Perek Shmini, and see how is this. It's such an easy question. It really is. It's not hard. Anyone could get it. Just by scanning the earlier Mishnah out of the chapter, you can see how different this one is. When you get the answer, don't blurt it out. Let other people find it also. No, in the Mishnah, beginning from Perek Shmini.
Ideally, everyone should write down the answer so that no one from the pedagogies.
I would have said it has to do with what you're making the blessing on as opposed to what the blessing is.
Oh. It's more obvious.
It's more obvious.
Oh. Okay.
Do you want an answer yet? Okay.
Well, we're too deep to see the obvious.
You do not have to be deep to see this.
Dispute between Shammai and Hillel.
Very good.
No dispute at all.
Even though we said don't blurt it out.
Oh, sorry.
That's for us.
Right? So let's go through the whole perek and see how strange our Mishnah is in the framework of the perek. The perek begins. I'm going back to the beginning of Perek Shmini. Right, so everyone has the piece of paper in front of them. Right? Perek Shmini. Beginning of Perek Shmini. It says, Elu Dvarim Shebein Beit Shemayu Beit Hillel Besuda. These are the matters that are between, that are disputed, of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai concerning the meal. And that's the koteret, that's the heading of the whole chapter. And every single Mishnah fits into that heading. The first Mishnah, after the heading for the whole chapter, says, Beit Shammai Umrim, X, and then Beit Hillel Umrim, Y. There's a machloket concerning matters that are connected to the Suda, to the meal. And then Mishnah Bet, Beit Shammai Umrim, and afterwards it says Beit Hillel Umrim. It's again a machloket, a dispute concerning matters in the Suda. Mishnah Gimel also says Beit Shammai Umrim, and then Beit Hillel Umrim. And Mishnah Dalet also says Beit Shammai Umrim, and then Beit Hillel Umrim. And Mishnah Hay also says Beit Shammai Umrim, and then Beit Hillel Umrim. And then Mishnah Vav is missing that. By the way, to go on to Mishnah we haven't seen yet, the same thing in the Mishnah after our Mishnah of today and the Mishnah after that. Mishnah Zayin says, Mi sha'achal v'shachach v'lo birech, someone who ate and forgot and didn't bless, didn't say, Birkat HaMazon, Beit Shammai Umrim X, and Beit Hillel Umrim Y. And the Mishnah after that, Mishnah Chet, Ba'lehem Yain l'char HaMazon, comes for them wine after the food, Ve'ein shamelo toakos, and they don't have nothing but that same kos, Beit Shammai Umrim X, and Beit Hillel Umrim Y. So the whole chapter, without any exceptions, except our Mishnah, comes under the heading of Elu Dvarim Shebein Beit Shammai Uveit Hillel Besuda. These are the matters, I'm quoting from the very first words of the chapter again, these are the matters between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel concerning the Suda. So then the question is, the obvious question, if that's the koteret, that's the heading of the perek, and every single Mishnah falls under that heading, why is our Mishnah stuck in this perek like a sore thumb? And the answer to that question is not hard either.
Oh, it's the context.
It's the context. What do you mean by that?
The previous Mishnah talks
right.
about Havdalah.
Right.
So this is just...
Right. So that means our Mishnah is really not a separate Mishnah. It's simply a continuation, a parenthetical, perhaps you would even say a footnote, to the previous Mishnah. Now here it's important to remember something we've said a number of times, which is that when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi edited the Mishnah, he divided it into starim, shisha starim, six orders. Then he divided it into mesechtot, and if I remember correctly, there's 63 mesechtot, 63 tractates. And each tractate he divided to prakim into chapters, and he did not divide those chapters further. What we have division into Mishnah doesn't exist. Mishnah, Mishnah, Mishnah. In the original work, simply one long chapter. And of course, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi certainly would not have made our Mishnah a separate Mishnah. It doesn't deserve to be a separate Mishnah. It only is understood as a footnote to or as a parenthetic continuation of the previous Mishnah. And I think, indeed, in this chapter, the Talmud has all the Mishnah as one at the beginning, right? Is that what you have in front of you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. It has it just as what there's a single Mishnah in this version.
Yeah. And that's really the original way the Mishnah was edited, is one large unit
it's
for
not
every
normally that way in this book. It's just this chapter.
Yeah, there are certain chapters, and we don't really know why it's like that. It's probably just an idiosyncrasy of the printer going back to the first edition of the Talmud. When the Talmud was originally written in manuscripts, it was no Mishnah at all. The Mishnah was a separate manuscript. The Talmud was a separate manuscript. When it was first printed, so the printer put the Mishnah out. Where did he put them? Wherever he wanted. Sometimes he put them all at the beginning of a chapter. And sometimes they're interspersed into the Gemara. But it's, as far as I know, it's pretty meaningless why it's like this sometimes or why it's like this some other times. Okay. Next question is question 3 on the question sheet. Divide the Mishnah into two parts. So take a minute to think and don't blurt out the answer. Let someone else think. schnoz, I'll take a bite of my bagel. You have no idea. Yes, you do.
I can make up an idea.
No.
So I would say the first part A is all of it except the last clause.
Mm-hmm. And of course. And on what basis do you say that?
Because all the beginning part is a series of what we don't say over, and the last sentence or clause, however you want to say it, is and don't say has to do with timing. It's a different topic, really.
Yeah, it's a completely different topic. Notice that grammatically, the first word, the first two words of the Mishnah, Ein Mivrachim, they apply to the first clause, the second clause, and the third clause, but not to the fourth clause. Ein Mivrachim, number one, Lo Ala Ner V'Lo Ala B'Samim Shel Goyim. Number two, V'Lo Ala Ner V'Lo Ala B'Samim Shel Metim. Number three, V'Lo Ala Ner V'Lo Ala B'Samim Shel Lefnei Avodah Zarah. The first two words of the Mishnah, Ein Mivrachim, apply to those three phrases. Whereas, the fourth phrase, Ein Mivrachim, here it repeats the words Ein Mivrachim. So you see, structurally, even if you didn't know Hebrew, even if this was Chinese, but structurally, you could see that the fourth clause is a separate matter. Right?
Yeah.
Only Eric said right. See what I'm saying, Reuven? Structurally, even if you didn't know Hebrew, didn't know the meaning of the words, you can structurally, the words Ein Mivrachim appear at the beginning of the first clause, the beginning of the fourth, but not the beginning of the second and the third. Because the second and the third are continuation of the first.
Yeah, I got it. Conceptually, also.
Yeah, and conceptually, of course, also. Yeah. Not just structurally, but conceptually also, it's two different matters. One is what we don't bless over, and the other is something that we do. And even going further, one is the materials we use, and the other is the timing. We'll see if it's timing. Mm-hmm. We'll have to talk about that. Well, you know what? Let's talk about it right now. So, David, when you said timing, what did you mean by timing?
I really just meant when you're allowed to say it, or what, I guess I should have said, what has to...
Until.
Yeah, until, right.
So what is the timing there in the fourth clause? I'm saying, what is...
Okay, I'll tell you the question that I had when I read it, which was, usually we say a blessing and then we do something. This seems to turn it around.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. Usually we say a blessing, and then we do it, and that applies to what types of blessings? Let's think.
On food,
right. Birkot ha-ne'anim. We bless before we enjoy, in the sense of, according to one opinion, asking permission, as it were. Getting permission, we first say the blessing over the orange juice, then we drink it over the bread, and then we eat it. And the same thing with actions with mitzvot. The same thing, right?
Yeah.
It's called over l'asiyatan. Before the doing. First we say the blessing, then we do the mitzvah. Is there any case in which we do or enjoy first, and then we say the blessing? Mm-hmm. When?
By washing our hands before bread.
Well, is that exactly so?
We wash our hands.
And then we say the blessing. Except that's really an exception, because the blessing is over the end of the act, which is the drying. And we say the blessing before the drying, because that's the end of the act. So that's really, I shouldn't say an exception, I mean it's just it's an exceptional way of understanding the act. But once you understand the act, blessing is really before the act, because the act is the drying.
It seems the bracha says netila, right?
What does that mean?
Washing.
What does netila mean?
Taking our hands.
Oh, taking.
But yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago. It's the taking of your hands. The question is, taking for what?
Wait,
you know what? Let's not get into that.
The art school says, I think it's washing. I think.
In the air, that's what we do, but it certainly doesn't mean washing. And if you want to take it as washing, washing includes the act of drying. But now we're just getting, that's, but the truth is that we say the bracha before we do the end of the act there. But when do we say a bracha before, when do we say a bracha after the enjoying, the act, whatever you call it? It's rare.
Oh, I was going to say when you, on Shabbat, when you make kiddush, it's making the bracha on Shabbat, it's already Shabbat, but you make the bracha after Shabbat is already in.
Let me think about that a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Kriyas
Torah. But that's an example where it's passive.
Yeah.
Shabbat.
So that actually could be an example of what I was thinking of. I just hadn't thought of that, but it could be. But let's take a case that's clearer.
Okay.
This is what you call Birkot HaShevach. Like we have three different types of brachot.
Good.
We have Birkot HaNenin, brachot of what we enjoy. And then we said clearly, the bracha is before we enjoy. We're asking permission. Then we have Birkot HaMitzvot. Right? And that's the same thing. The bracha is before the mitzvah. But there's also a third type of bracha, Birkot HaShevach, brachot of praise. What are some brachot of praise?
Birkat HaShachar. Most of those brachot.
Asher Yatzar. After we leave the bathroom, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, praise.
Thunder,
lightning, mountains, the Yama Gadol. Right? It's not that we enjoy it. We are exposed to it, and we say, praise God. You know, hallelujah. And for Birkot HaShevach, it's after the experience. And I'm not sure, perhaps Kiddush is in the same category, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I just want to say I'm not sure, ? Birkot HaShevach, we say the bracha after.
How about Birkat HaGomel?
Birkat HaGomel, the same thing. Mm-hmm. The same thing.
It's after.
Right?
It's after the experience.
It's
And indeed, I should use the full phrase. I said Birkot HaShevach. The full phrase is Birkot HaShevach VaHodaya. Blessings of praise and thanksgiving. You thank after it was done. Very good. Look at that.
Hey.
Join us.
Birkat HaMazon.
Right.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Birkot HaShevach VaHodaya. So anyway, let's take what we just learned about different types of brachot and plug it back into the Mishnah here in the fourth phrase of the Mishnah I have to give to Martin Appel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Who's come in his clerical collar?
I've just come off the ice, actually.
Okay. So let's look at the Mishnah. Ein mevarchim al haner ad shi'otu le'oro. We do not bless on the ner until one enjoys of the light. So what it seems to be saying, if I read it literally, which I think the way David was first reading it, we don't say the bracha until we enjoy, which seems to say the enjoyment comes first and the bracha comes second, which would be Birkot HaShevach VaHodaya, just like the Yam HaGadol, just like the mountains, just like Birkot HaGomer. We enjoy it, and let's not say enjoy it, I'm sorry. We
experience
it, and then we say thank you for it. Right. The issue, however, is that sometimes this Hebrew phrase, Ein mevarchim laner ad, it doesn't mean in a temporal sense. But rather it means, and help me find the proper English word, it's not a temporal sense, but it's simply a condition. You don't say the blessing unless you enjoy. Again, don't say enjoy. You don't say the blessing unless you
experience.
But it doesn't necessarily mean what order those things are in.
It's almost like Eile Im Ken?
Yeah. You don't bless Elam Cain, there is enjoyment, but when the enjoyment has to be, does it have to be before, as a literal reading would have it, or could even be afterwards, is not clear in the Hebrew, and it's even not clear in the halakha. It's not clear in the halakha what type of blessing this blessing is. Let's just think for a minute. Let's just think of Havdalah every single week at Shari Tfilah. Mm-hmm. What order do you think we usually do things in? Does anyone ever notice? Think about it. What do we do first?
We make the blessing of the Havdalah, of the cross of vines.
I'm talking about the Ner. I'm talking about the Ner. What do we do first? Do we
light the Ner?
Do we use it first? Or do we do bless over it first?
Bless over it first.
Don't you have to define
if you notice what most people do, Rabbi Pearl says the blessing, then you see everyone lifting up their hands.
Right.
What people? Now, but notice what Rabbi Pearl does.
The halacha is to put your hands before, right?
The halacha is not clear. This is machloket. But if you notice that, as far as I've seen, I think the Rabbi Pearl seems to hold that first yoto and then the blessing, which is the way David read it literally. But what most people do is the opposite. They first hear the blessing and then they use it. Most people are, let's say, they are intuitively understanding, although if you walk in the middle of the night, they might not give this answer, but intuitively what they're doing, they're assuming it's like all the other brachot of birkot, hanenim, that you bless and then you enjoy. But there's a makhluk in the halacha, it might not be birkot hanenim, actually might be birkot hashevach v'hodaya, which would mean the opposite, that you have to first use it and then say the bracha. Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be how Rabbi Pearl holds.
Take a look. Or even ask him.
Okay, I would even notice.
Right? Okay, so anyway, let's go back to the next questions of the Mishnah. How could the Mishnah seemingly, this is number four, seemingly have been worded more concisely?
Thank you for the ha'ara, because halacha says you should put your hand up. I mean, that's one of the days we have looking at hands up before, but it doesn't say because it's a shevach here. You know, I'll say the bracha because you're thank you for the light, you know, but it's a different, you know, it's a better way of looking at it.
I didn't say better or worse.
No, I'm saying it's a better way of looking at it if you do it that way. You're actually saying a shevach because you see the light.
And then you're thanking for it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the question was, number four, how could the Mishnah seemingly have been worded more concisely?
All the lows, all the knots.
Right, the whole...
You could have just had a don't, and then a whole list. All the things don't do. Or
right.
Don't do it over.
It's if we divided the Mishnah into two parts, then the whole first part, that is three phrases, really could be a seemingly one phrase. It could be, Ein mevarchim, lo ala ner, velo ala bisumim, shel goyim, shel metim, v'shel avodah zarah. Why do you have to phrase it all in three separate clauses? And that's a difficult question. And even though, the next question in my sheet says, can you think of any possible reason why it's not worded in a more concise fashion? Well, perhaps you can think of something, but I can't. Seriously, the question is better than any answer. But you might say that it wants to differentiate between three separate ideas to indicate they're not the same principle. And we'll have to think later what the principles are, but it's really not clear at all why the Mishnah talks in such verbose language. Yeah.
Could it be historical in the sense that maybe they came from different places?
Gold star, right? Very good. It certainly could be that it's a matter of the redaction of the Mishnah. There's no intrinsic meaning of it. This is the history of the text. Certainly could be. I don't know of a better explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, in other words, it wasn't written as one text, but there were three different ideas that were brought together.
Three different prices.
Three different prices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly could be. The Gemara is going to say something about it, but it's not going to be a complete answer, and not going to be a very satisfying answer. Okay. So now we finally get to question six. In what different ways might one interpret the case of Ne'er Shel Goyim? It says you're not allowed to say the blessing on Motzei Shabbat during Havdalah aner shel goyim. What would that even mean? Before we ask why, but what does it mean? What does it mean, ner shel goyim?
It could mean a light owned by, or it could be a light, could be lighted by, created by.
Right. There are two possibilities here.
You're used for. Used for the purpose of...
A third possibility.
No, that's a third. Used
a third
for the purpose
right?
of a non-Jewish ceremony.
Right. So let's see it clearly. First of all, it could be owned by, and that, of course, emphasizes the fact that the word is ner and not or. When we have in the Mishnah the word or, which means the light, it doesn't say the light, it says the ner. Perhaps it means simply ownership of the pottery. Who owns the pottery? But it could also be that it is talking about the or, because sometimes, like I said, the word ner refers not just to the kli, but to that which comes out of it, the light that comes out of it. So it could be, number one, it could be simply ownership of the physical vessel. But number two, it could be who lit the vessel, who lit the fire. It also could be not who owns the vessel and not who lit it, but it could be who used it since it was lit. It's really not clear. So let's now ask ourselves, can we think of a reason why it would be forbidden to make Havdalah over an air that's owned by a non-Jew? Owned by a non-Jew. Then the second possibility, we said it means a fire that was lit by a non-Jew. Can we think of a reason to not do Havdalah over a fire that was lit by a non-Jew? And the third question would be, what if it's the usage? If a non-Jew used the flame, is there reason not to do Havdalah over a flame that was used by a non-Jew? So those are the questions we have to ask ourselves. Okay, let's go on. Now we get to question 8, or is it 7? In what different ways might one interpret the case of Bisamim Shel Goyim? Bisamim Shel Goyim, well, seemingly, in Bisamim, we have less to talk about. Because usually Bisamim is not something that's lit. That's Mugmar. Remember, we had a long time ago putting the Mugmar on the coals to make a smell. Bisamim usually is not something you put on coals, it's just something that smells. So, is it bisamim that are lit by non-Jews? No such thing. Is it bisamim that are used by non-Jews? No such thing. It can only be bisamim that are owned by non-Jews. So why would you not allow to make Havdalah over bisamim that are owned by non-Jews?
Could I be chalek?
Yes, you can.
There may be certain uses of fragrances for non-Jewish ceremonies. So it could, why couldn't it be... Bisamim that are used by non-Jews for certain...
Not only can you be chalek, but I'm very happy you are, because sometimes I say things. I said, is anyone going to call me on that? That's really not so... And exactly when I said that, I said to myself, it's one way of looking at it, that... But you're right. Your way of looking at it is better than mine. It could also be, perhaps, bisamim that are used by non-Jews, even if they're owned by Jews, perhaps there's something wrong with the fact that they use them.
There are certain idolatrous ceremonies, I think, that use
Of course.
Incense.
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
Could be. Okay, then we get to the matter of Metim. Then we get to the matter of Metim, which is in my questions, question 9 and 10. And can we think of what's the case? What's the case and what's the meaning of lo al haner velo al abisamim shel metim? What would it mean, bisamim and ner of metim? What would that mean?
Doesn't that mean a candle that lit for a dead person or something like that? Candles that are lit when somebody watches a dead person.
Ah. And why do we light a candle for the dead? Or what does it mean to have a candle lit for the dead?
But because sometimes they put candles in there when the person is dead, you know, in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't say no blessing on that candle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I think of.
Okay. And what about now the Bisamim of Metim?
Bisamim could be used, maybe he used it before for the Avodah Zorah. The same psalm.
Okay. But it says shel metim. What would it mean, bisamim shel metim?
Shel metim, yeah. Well, goyim bring sometimes flowers to a mess, to a dead person. If somebody dies by the non-Jews, they bring flowers.
Okay, but this is bisamim, not flowers, but it's spices. Why would you have spices connected with a dead body?
The smell, maybe.
The smell.
Yeah. The smell,
right?
Could it have any relation to the previous phrase and be related to idolatrous practice? Because it follows over shel ovdei kochavim and then
some type of worship of the maker.
Right.
Okay, we can think about that. But let's see the Gemara now that I have in the sheet concerning this, the Metim. The Gemara is going to be not the first sheet, not the second sheet, and not the third sheet, and not the fourth sheet, but the fifth sheet. The fifth sheet is the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, Daf Nun Gimel. And the very middle there, you see that it's in brackets. Ein mevarchin lo al haner v'lo l'besumim shel metim. And the Gemara says, my ta'ama, what's the reason? Ner lechavod hu da'vida. The ner, for honor it is done.
Of the dead, yeah.
Lechavod, for the honor, who? De, that, avida. It's done. In other words, the ner is not there for light. It's there to honor the dead. And besamim, labore recha hu davidi. To labore, the language of la'avor, to make pass. To make pass the recha, the smell, hu davida. It is done. It's not there for enjoyment. It's there for a different reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
So then I'll put you on the spot. If it makes sense, explain what you mean.
It's because the purpose of using it should be for that ceremony, for this particular ceremony, Havdalah, and anything that takes away from that, where you see a clear example, Shalom Eitim, it's used for another purpose. When we're making a bracha, we're doing it for the purpose of Havdalah, and not for this.
So I would take what you said, but slightly alter it. It's not that the ner and the bishamim can't be used for any other purpose. They can be used for another purpose, as long as the other purpose is one of enjoyment. Of the thing for itself. Uh-huh. If I light a candle in order to find my way in the dark, I can use a candle for Havdalah. But if I lit that candle just in order to get the wax, for example, to stick together two cups to make something for my daughter, then no. So here, in the case of the Metim, it's not being used for enjoyment. No one lit the spices to enjoy the spices, but rather just to get rid of the Reach. And the same thing with the Ner. The Ner wasn't lit for enjoyment, was lit for a purpose that has nothing to do with enjoying the Ner. It's just there for Kavod. But if I lit it for enjoyment, I could use it for Havdalah. In both cases, both the...
Like a bonfire or...
Yeah. Or something, a candle that I light when I come to my house after Shabbat because I need the light. Then I can make Havdalah with that. That's fine.
Or to start cooking.
Okay. Now we're going to learn the Gemara. The Gemara that's on the first sheet in order after the question sheet. Okay. So the bottom of the page, this is Masechet Brachot Daf Nun Bet Amud Bet, and the Dibur Matchil is in brackets. Rav Steinsaltz listed it as Hey. Ein Mevarchin Chulei. Right, that's a quote from our Mishnah. It's the Dibur Matchil. It's
the first page.
The first the piece questions. Of paper after the questions, right at the bottom there. Okay. So who's going to read? She smiled when I said that.
I'll read.
Okay.
En mevachim v'chule bishlam aner mishum de lo shavat ele besamim matam lo amar rabi.
Wait, what does that mean?
Because it's we don't bless, etc. On the fullness of the candle? Or on... No, what? Bishlam aner?
So what does the word bishlama mean? It's a classic Talmudic phrase.
We understand.
It makes sense. It sits well. It's at peace, right? Bishlama. We understand.
Because it's not Shabbat.
The word, it's a verb and not a noun.
Because it didn't rest.
Because it didn't rest. Let's understand. So now what case in the Mishnah are we talking about? There were three cases of Ein Mivrachin in the Mishnah. There was one of Goyim, one of Metim, and one of Avodah Zarah. Which are we talking about? Well, most logically, we're talking about the first, second, and the third. Most logically, we're talking about the first.
The first. The non-Jew didn't rest.
Simply because the Gemara will relate to the Mishnah in order, usually.
So all things being equal,
we'll assume that it's talking about the first. So this is the Goyim. So why can't we use a Ner Shel Goyim? And the Gemara's answer is, I know it makes sense, it's Bishlama Mishum, because the Lo Shabbat. So what does that mean?
So it could either be that the holder didn't rest or the non-Jew didn't rest, I would think.
Well, it says Bishlam Ner. It refers to the Ner Lo Shabbat. The Ner didn't observe Shabbat. Since it was owned by...
Could have been lit during Shabbat, right.
Okay.
Right. Just let me ask, now theoretically, what David said is certainly a possibility, and that's what Rabbeinu Yonah holds. But Rashi is going to hold something else. Can you think of any other sense in which a Ner owned by a non-Jew Lo Shabbat? So the most logical possibility is, like David said, that if a non-Jew owns it, then I have to suspect that he lit it on Shabbat. Now that's fine for him, he's allowed.
Right.
But it does something to the Ner. That's now a Ner the Lo Shabbat. In the essence of the Ner at Lo Shabbat was lit on Shabbat. Is there any other sense I can think of a Ner that Lo Shabbat? Let's say that the non-Jew lit it before Shabbat began. But still, in what sense could it be that Lo Shabbat?
Because he did not, it was not lit for the light. It was not lit with a purpose, to rest or something like that.
Well, let's say the non-Jew lit it in order to use the light. He lit it in order to use the light. Can you think of any other sense in which a ner of a non-Jew would not Shabbat?
Moved around. I mean, just the literal
moved around.
I don't know what the significance of it is, but...
So I'll tell you that if it's moved around, then it actually puts it into the same category you said earlier, because if it's moved around, then it gets better and worse lit as the oil moves. That's why we're not allowed to move in there on Shabbat, because it lights better, it lights worse as it moves in the oil. So let's read Rashi. Rashi has a different understanding. It's a pretty interesting understanding that Rashi has. So look at the upper right-hand corner in the Rashi script. I have it in brackets there. It's about 12 lines from the top of the page. Mishum de lo Shabbat. Look at Rashi's interpretation. So can you read it, Mr. Galler, the Rashi?
Mishum de lo Shabbat. Mamlechet Aveira. It's a job of an... He's doing an Aveira with moving it. Shehanochi oisim alucha le'oiroi. The non-Jew lit a candle that he should be able to work.
Very good. Mr. Galley got 100% right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the Nochri, continue, right?
Vatanya lakamen or shel shabach. Vatanya lakamen or shel shabach. Ein mavachul. And we said it before that...
Further on, yeah.
Lakamen means further on.
Yeah.
We said that if a candle is lit, not to rest, to use it for work, to use it for some reason, the candle is not used to rest, to enjoy. If the candle is used for meloche, for work.
Right. So, Mr. Galler said exactly.
Hoil va never boy aveiro, because it was done on aveiro.
Through it.
Through it.
If the non-Jew lit his candle before Shabbat, and he used it on Shabbat to fix his car, Rashi says that's called the ner shelo Shabbat, that the light of the ner was used for a malacha.
Yeah.
That's an interesting interpretation.
It's not the doesn't sit well with the definition of ner that we gave. It's a little bit forced.
Right. Well, like I said, sometimes the word ner refers to the or.
Okay.
That's certainly, I think, even in the interpretation David gave, the interpretation is that it was lit on Shabbat. That didn't do anything to the vessel. It means that the light was lit on Shabbat.
Right. Okay.
So let me just go over the words, because I'm afraid that Mr. Galley read it too well and too fast for most of us to really follow what he was saying. So mishum de lo Shabbat, I'm going back to the Dibur Matril, mimelechet avera. And Rashi here is continuing the sentence of the Gemara. It's not that you have a colon and then an explanation. He's continuing the sentence. Sentence is that because it didn't rest, and Rashi adds, from melecha, that's forbidden. Melechet avera. From the melecha of an avera.
A forbidden job.
A forbidden job.
Work, yeah.
Shan nochri osem melecha lo'oro, because the nochri does melecha to its light, its light, with its light. He used the light to see his car that he was fixing. V'tanya lekaman or shalosh shabbat, and we learn further on in a braita that an or shalosh shabbat, light that didn't rest, ein mevrachim alav, we don't say a blessing over it, ho'il v'ne'evra bo avira, since was avirad in it an avira, it was transgressed in a transgression, not that it was forbidden for the goy, he's allowed to do it, but it's something that's not allowed on Shabbat. And in some sense, that did something to the light. This is really interesting.
In a metaphysical sense.
Yeah, that we can no longer use it for Havdalah. Now, just to show you that what David said was not wrong, what David said is found in Rabbeinu Yonah. Let's go to Rabbeinu Yonah, the next piece of paper, and the next one after that. It looks like this. You can see Rabbeinu Yonah written over here. Right. This is a photostat. Not from the Gemara. It looks like Gemara, but it's not Gemara. This is the Rif. This is the Alfasi, Hilchot Alfasi, sometimes printed at the back of the Gemara. It's a whole new work. It's not the Gemara. And it's his paraphrase summation of the Gemara. And I think I once mentioned that at certain times, like in the Golden Age of Spain, we have whole communities that didn't learn Gemara. They learned Alfasi, which is a summation of the Gemara. And since so many different groups, they had Alfasi Yomi, right? They were learning Alfasi, so commentaries were written on the Alfasi. And you have your commentary that is written on the Alfasi. And we're going to look at this whole thing as Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary on the Alfasi. And of course, any commentary on the Alfasi is ipso facto a commentary on the Gemara, because the Alfasi is nothing more than a paraphrase of the Gemara. So you see there in my brackets, these brackets are kind of hard to see. I'll put my finger on it. It says, Dibur Matril is Madniten. The Mishnah.
You're right.
And the Alfasi says, I'm sorry, the Rabbeinu Yonah, this is, by the way, Rabbeinu Yonah Migarona that wrote the famous book Sharei Tshuva.
Uh-huh.
Same Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes, Matnitin, the Mishnah, Ein Mivarachin al Haner Bala Bisumim Shal Nochrim. We don't say the blessing over the Ner and over the Bisumim of Nochrim. You see, he had a third text. He doesn't have a text of Goyim. He doesn't have Obdei Avodah Zarah. He has Nochrim, a third text. He says, Mefaresh B'Gemara, it's explained in the Gemara, the Ner Shal Nochrim, that the Ner Shal Nochrim, Mishum De Lo Shabbat, it's because it didn't rest. Klomar, that is to say, shidliku ota, that they lit it b'Shabbat. O shehitu ota b'Shabbat, or they tilted on Shabbat, just like you said. V'tzirich levarech b'davar shel heter, and you have to say the bracha over a davar shel heter, over a thing, in this case in there,
a clean thing.
Of permissibility.
And by that we mean permissibility for the Jews' use.
Right.
Which is
again, it's the Nochri, since the Nochri lit it on Shabbat, or, by the way, we don't know that the... Stop, you're distracting your vein.
Oh. Sorry. Take the preference. Okay, come on. You're not going to throw up, are you?
No flirting.
The tapping's okay, you splitting your smile at him.
That's So Rabbeinu Yonah holds that the ner shel goyim, since we don't know, it's possible he lit on Shabbat. We can't use it for Havdalah. And Rashi says that the ner shel goyim, since it's possible that he used it for his malacha on Shabbat, therefore we can't use it for Havdalah. So we suspect there are two different interpretations here of what the essence of Havdalah is, but we probably really can't think of what the difference is, what the machloket is, but there's something going on here. There's something going on. Okay, so let's now go back to the Gemara.
Which this is, this seems like, you know, a very simple understanding of a near that's, you know, not hasn't rested. You know, where the other one, where he's doing all these things around the nair, seems it's very odd. But now all of a sudden the nair would be
good point. That's a good point.
I'd say, you know, what he's using would be prohibited, but not the nair itself. The nair just sitting there.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point. In other words, I can understand that if I lit it, or the goy lit it on Shabbat, well, that's something in the goof of the nair. But if the goy was just using it to fix his car, how did it affect the nair? Why should I not be allowed to make Havdalah on it? It's a very, very good question. Yeah.
You have to apologize because...
No need to apologize.
I didn't know the first time, you know, I didn't know this place so long. This could be the key.
I'll take it back.
Oh, yeah, but lunch is coming. That was breakfast.
All the more so because let's say you have a law of
I hope you
more than 24-hour candle. So I've lighted it on Friday.
Yeah,
you know,
and
what
it's
they
sitting
tell
there, it's
don't get involved with me.
Well, he didn't say it in Russian.
Seid gesund,
Kinder. Have a good day, Mr.
Rector.
It's a pleasure always to see you, to study, but you have to have set up the time. You know, and this timing is for me.
It's not good.
See you later.
I didn't tell when I was so late. You know what I have to...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Bye-bye.
So, but next week you can stay till the... Next
week. Hashem, next week I have the time already set up.
Okay.
So if I have a light and it just sits there, it's not moved at all during Shabbos, but a goy could have come and done work from it.
Even if a Jew did it, you're saying?
Yeah, I lit it. It's my candle on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
All fine.
Right.
It lasts until Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't somebody else come and done some malacha based on its light?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This doesn't
deal with that.
Say that.
Yeah. Right.
Doesn't say you can't use that.
I suppose that the Mishnah and the interpretations of the Mishnah are based upon the sociological reality that Jews and non-Jews are pretty separate, that just wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But in theory, according to Rashi, if it happened, then in Achinami, indeed, I couldn't use my own light for Havdalah, if a non-Jew, or even if a Jew had done Melacha, it's not something we would expect, that a Jew come and done Melacha with my candle, then I couldn't use it for Havdalah, according to Rashi. Okay, so we're going back to the Gemara. We're again back on Nun Bet and Mud Bet, which is the first piece of paper in the handout after the question sheet. And we had read the first line, which I'll just repeat, and we'll go on. Ein mivrachin chule b'shlom aner mishum de lo Shabbat. Reason you can't use the ner is because it's lo Shabbat. Ela bisamim ma tam lo. Why can't you use the bisamim of a goy? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, said Rav Yehuda, name of Rav, Hakha v'misibat nokrim asfinan. Here, in a get-together, and money means a party, a get-together, it comes from the word of misubin, right? Misubin, or reclining around the table. Misiba is a place in which everyone is misubin. So here, in a misiba of nokrim, we are dealing. That you can't take the bisamim that came from a party of goyim. It's not a matter of the ownership of goyim.
Oh,
it's a matter of the usage of goyim. Right? Not the ownership, but the usage. Why? Because a stam get-together of Nochrim, we would assume is Avodah Zarah. There's something of Avodah Zarah there. And just like Eric had said, that if the Bisumim were used for Avodah Zarah, then we can't use them for Havdalah. Ah, but now the Gemara is going to ask a terrible kusha against this. What kusha would we bring up? We, knowing the content and the structure of the Mishnah, what difficulty might we bring up against this interpretation of the first phrase of the Mishnah?
I'm sorry, I went ahead a little bit, so can I answer?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fit, the Sefer is not talking, it doesn't fit in with the context. We weren't talking about Avodah Zarah at all before.
It's just the opposite of what you're saying.
Oh.
It fits in too well to the context.
Oh, it fits in too well. So why would we need it? Why would we need to learn that from it? Because it fits in.
Because it's already been said at the end of the Mishnah. At the end of the Mishnah says, remember. Right, it's Lo Shel Goyim, Lo Shel Metim, but Lo Shel Avodah Zarah. If the first phrase means Avodah Zarah, then what do you need the third phrase for?
Right.
And that's what Gemara says.
It's redundant.
It's redundant. I'm in the fourth word of the third line of the Gemara. Ha midekatani seifa. Ha means behold. Midekatani is four words. Mi, de, ka, tani. Four words in one. What it means is ha is behold. Mi is from. De is she, that. Ka has no meaning. Tani, we learned. And seifa means the end. Behold, from what we learned in the seifa. Ein mevrachim lo al aner lo bisumim shel avodah zarah. Repetitious. Miklal means from here you learn. Dereisha, that dereisha, the beginning of the Mishnah, lav, not in avodah zarah skin, not in avodah zarah talking about it, because that's talked about in the seifa, in the third part.
Yeah.
This is the assumption that every word has to have a unique meaning, has to be something different, right?
And here it's pretty obvious kusha. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Hanina Misura, said Rabbi Hanina from the city of Sura, Matam Kamar, that the structure of the Mishnah is a structure of Matam. Kamar means it says, it means. What's the reason? In other words, what he's going to say is that the third part of the Mishnah comes to explain, not to add, but to explain the first part of the Mishnah. Now he says what he means. Matam ein mevrachin lo al aner velo al bisumim shel nochrim. What is the reason that we don't bless not on the ner, not on the bisumim shel nochrim? Mipnei shestam misibat nochrim lavodah zarah. Because a stam get together of nochrim is for avodah zarah. So what we're saying here is that the first phrase of the Mishnah talks about nochrim, and its reason is given in the third part of the Mishnah. Very, very difficult to say this. The Gemara is really going on a limb. By the way, the Gemara doesn't have a better explanation, but this is a terrible explanation. First of all, because the first phrase and the third phrase are the same words. How can you say when is the halakha and when is the reason when it's the same words? It's ein mevrachim, not on next, not on why. Not on why. But the second reason why this is a very bad explanation is because the first phrase and the third phrase are the first and the third, not the first and the second.
Right. You would expect that it would give the tam right after.
Yeah, if there's something in the middle. So, all told, it's a very, very forced explanation, but the Gemara does not have a better explanation. That's the end. That's the end of the discussion. So, it's kind of hard to understand.
What if you understood the second phrase as meaning light or spices used for not just any dead, but idolatrous use of dead.
So it's then the third phrase with the explanation of both A and B.
Yeah.
Although wording doesn't
fit,
I mean...
The wording doesn't fit so well, but, and something else, the Gemara itself doesn't say that, because when the Gemara explains the matter of metim, it says it's because, even if it's Jewish metim, it's just that it's not used for enjoyment, it's used for a different purpose.
Yeah.
So we have a bit of a mess here. And I don't have, well, I'd say the Gemara doesn't have a better answer.
Can I ask a question, bring up a point just that's a little bit off the topic, but it seems like it leaves open the possibility. It says, "Stam misibashil gwen lavudazarahi," but that assumption could possibly change based on the sociological reality of the goyim.
So
that
of course you're right.
In later generations, if we see that in this time period, the Jewish world, they were what we would call avodah zarah, they would be defined as avodah zarah, and all of their get-togethers would be for the purpose of avodah zarah. Living in a later time period, when that wouldn't be the case, then it would have different halachic ramifications.
Yeah, and it could be that it would be permitted to use the ner and the besamim of goyim, if you knew for certain. In theory.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on. Tana Rabbanan, this is the second to last line on the page. Tana Rabbanan, O Sheshavat Mivarchin Alav. This is a Breita. We learned in a Breita. O Sheshavat Mivarchin Alav. Light or flame that rested, we Mivarchin Alav. V'shalosh Shavat Ein Mivarchin Alav. And if it didn't rest, we don't Mivarchin Alav. So that basically gives support, credence, what we had said earlier, that the reason for our Mishnah concerning the Ner Shel Goyim is because it Lo Shabbat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now the Breita ends, because the next words are Aramaic, and the Gemara asks the important question, My Shabbat to my Lo Shabbat. What does it mean Shabbat? What does it mean Lo Shabbat? So we've already in this room brought up Rashi as opposed to Rabbeinu Yonah, but the Gemara doesn't know that yet. The Gemara just asks, what does it mean Shabbat? What does it mean Lo Shabbat?
This is still 800 years before, a few hundred years.
But of course, we know that Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah knew the Gemara, but it must be the Gemara that comes up is not going to be helpful
in
deciding between the two of them. That they both understand that their interpretations fit into what the Gemara is about to say. So the Gemara says, Inema, if we will say, this is a suggested answer, hypothesis, what does it mean, Shabbat and Lo Shabbat? Lo Shabbat, Mahamat Malacha, Filu Mimalechet Malacha Deheteira. If we will say, Lo Shabbat, from Mahamat means from Malacha, even from Malacha of Hetera, Deheteira, of Hetera, of permissibility. In other words, what would happen if you had a Nair that was used to
reading the newspaper. Reading a paper.
Yes, but no. Because that's not a malacha. What is a malacha de tera?
Oh, it's a regular malacha.
It means one of the 39 malachot that's allowed. When is one of the 39 malachot allowed?
In the case of chole.
In the case of chole.
Chole, yeah.
Chole sheyesh bo sakana, in other words, pikuach nefesh.
Yeah.
What would happen if I have a candle that I used to warm up food, but I have a light that a fire that I use to warm up food to cook food for a chole on Shabbat. I was allowed to do it, but it's still a melacha. So would that prevent me from doing havdalah? The fact that I have to be careful with my language here, not to give something away. Would that prevent me from using this ore for havdalah? The Gemara says no, it wouldn't prevent. Vatanya, behold, we learned in a Breita, or shel chayav shel chule, mivarchim alav. The flame or the fire of a chayav. What's a chayav?
Animal.
Non-domestic. Chayav.
Somebody living. Someone is living.
This word is used in the last parak of Masechet Yoma. The chayav is allowed to wear shoes on Yom Kippur, lest she get cold and get sick.
Oh, you're a pregnant woman.
The woman who's given birth. 30 days after giving birth, she's called Chaya. She's called Chaya. It's a machloket. It's a machloket if it means a pregnant woman or a woman who's just given birth.
And she still lived. Is that the idea behind it? That she's given birth and...
Well, remember at the beginning of the book of Shemot that it says that the Jewish women, the Israelite women, gave birth before the midwife
said that ki chayot heina.
Because they were not because they were animals, because they were fruitful. They were life giving. Chayot in the sense of life giving. Anyway, so the chaya is the woman who gives life. So in any case, the halakha is that the or of a chaya and the or of a chule, and it means a chule sheyesh bo sakana, someone who's in danger. Of course, and you're allowed to do mlacha for them. The ner, their ner, you're allowed to use. So it's not an issue of mlacha was done. That's not the problem. The problem is mlacha de'isura.
Oh, is that Rashi's lashon? You can even pick it up. Mimlachet avera? That comes
very good.
In Rashi's
very good.
Also.
Very good. Okay. And we'll get back to that in a second. Okay, so we still want to know, what does it mean Shabbat?
Yeah.
The fact that work was done, the fact that there was avera connect. The fact that there was malacha connected to this doesn't make it forbidden. As long as there's malacha de hetera. Malacha that was allowed. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, my Shabbat. Says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, what does it mean Shabbat? What does it mean that the ner rested? She Shabbat mahamat malachet avera. That it rested from the malacha of avera. Not any malacha, but dafka avera. Tanya Nami Hachi, we also learned in a Braita. Nami means also. Ashishit. An ashishit is a lantern. Ashishit. Shahaika dolekit veholechet kolayam kulo. It's a case that David brought up an hour ago. A lantern that was lit and continued the whole day. In other words, it was lit before Leil Shabbat. It was lit before the beginning of Shabbat. Lemotzei Shabbat mevarchim aleya. On Motzei Shabbat, you can be mevarchim aleya. It doesn't have to be something that was lit just for Havdalah, and it doesn't have to be, it could be lit before Shabbat, as long as it doesn't have melechet avera connected to it, and it was lit before Shabbat, there's no melechet avera connected to it, then you can make Havdalah on it. Now, everyone still with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, let's talk again about Rabbeinu Yonah and Rashi. The question I'm going to ask is the following. In the second line of the Gemara that we just read, when it brings the Tanya, the Braita, the second line, the middle, it says, HaTanya, Or Shel Chaya V'Shel Chole. The light of a Chaya and the light of a Chole Mivrachim Alav. Despite the fact that in some sense there's a Malacha connected to them, still you're allowed to make Havdalah on them. Because it's a Malachit Hetera. It's a permitted malacha. Now the question I want to ask you is, how does Rashi understand that, and how does Rabbeinu Yonah understand that? How does Rashi understand the exact circumstances of the light of the Chaya and the Chule? And how does Rabbeinu Yonah understand the exact circumstances of the light of the Chule and of the Chaya? 3 minutes for thought. 3 minutes for thought. Don't throw it out. I have to finish my bagel. So think. Everyone's looking at her, no one's thinking.
I'm going to change her so everyone can.
According to change the diaper that fast?
It was easy to.
Wow.
I have a lot of experience with that.
So anyone thinking?
You ready?
Yeah.
So it could be, it's a light, the light of the sick or pregnant person or new mother is a light that was made for them on Shabbos.
According to?
That's according to Rabbi Yonah.
Mm-hmm.
Or Rashi, that was used, malach, was done based on them.
Right. Because if you think, Rashi would say, the or shel chayah, the or shel choleh, what's important is not that it was lit on Shabbat, rather, whenever it was lit in order to cook food for them. It was in order to, to soak them in hot water, to do all different types of things. It would be forbidden on Shabbat. The point is...
There's a remez of that in his Lashon also, right? The beginning.
Rashi, yeah. Right.
Mimlechet Avira.
Yeah.
He uses that.
And so the point is that Orshel Chayav, Orshel Chayav, according to Rashi, it's light, I don't care when it was lit, but it was used for forbidden purposes that are permitted for them. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, no, the point is not what was done with, the point is that it was that they woke up with a 104 fever on Shabbat and we lit the light for them. What we did afterwards is irrelevant, but we lit it on Shabbat. And then we went on, but the point was lit on Shabbat. And both of those are legitimate interpretations of the situation. But simply now, at the end of the whole thing, we have to ask ourselves, what is this machloket? So just let me say the details once again. That we know the details are that on Motzei Shabbat, you're certainly allowed to make Havdalah on a light that has been lit from before Shabbat. It doesn't have to be lit right then. But according to Rashi, there's a condition that it can't have been used for Melechet Isur on Shabbat. And according to Rabbeinu Yonah, there's only a condition, there's less of a condition, it can't have been lit on Shabbat. So then we ask ourselves, what actually is going on here? What are the two different conceptions of Havdalah that these two thinkers have? And I'll tell you straight out, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws. I have a certain idea, but it's not well founded in my mind. What's going on? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Again, I'm not looking for any particular answer because I don't know.
By lighting the candle and making the bracha on the candle, does it represent for 25 hours we haven't been allowed to do malacha? Now we're able to do this malacha. And if so, it would be a problem to use it if it was actually lit on Shabbat, maybe.
That's what I always thought, but the idea that you can use it from Friday negates that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there's sort of a Bubba Mice or something, or I don't know if that's fair, but that's what I always thought, that, oh, now I'm showing I can now light, and so Shabbat's over, but that contradicts the idea that I can use something from Friday. I'm not making a new light.
Yeah.
You mean you're just transferring?
I'm not transferring. I'm just
not even transferring.
The candle just is sitting there. Now I'm going to go look at my fingers on it, use it, and I'm going to say the blessing.
You said a question?
I have a question.
We all have questions, but we'll take another one.
I'm struggling with in what category does a Nir Neshama fall? Live for Shabbat.
Is it like a Nir Neshama Mitim?
Yeah. Oh, you put it there?
Well, my first reaction is said Nir Neshama. We do not light it, whenever we light it, for enjoyment, for use. We light it for kavod hamit. That's exactly what the Gemara says in the Mishnah, that it's not allowed to use the Havdalah.
Except Motzei Yom Kippur.
But isn't the halacha that we light from the Nir Neshama, but we can't use it itself? I'm trying to remember.
I thought it was that we light from the Nir Neshama, but why are we required to light from the Nir Neshama?
Because that flame itself, the goof of that flame, was not lit for anything but kavod, not for use, but I can light from it.
But how's that different from Motzei Shabbat?
It's not different. I'm saying it's not different.
But I thought there was a requirement, Motzei Yom Kippur, to light from a pre-existing flame.
Right. There is. And why is that different? I don't know.
Yeah.
Different than Shabbat. So anyway, again, I don't have any good answers, but I'm thinking the following. And I'm thinking as I'm talking. If on Motzei Shabbat, I'm celebrating the ability to creatively manipulate and mold the universe, I'm celebrating the possibility of using fire as energy to change the world, then the fact that it's been lit all of Shabbat is fine. I just don't want it to have been used for creative matters on Shabbat, because what I'm celebrating on Motzei Shabbat is that there's been a period of 25 hours when I've been allowed to have light on Shabbat. We can have light, right? We just can't use it for creative acts. So come Motzei Shabbat, I want to reuse it for creative acts. I think that makes a certain degree of sense to me. I'm celebrating again its reusability for creative acts. So what would be the difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah? Rashi is putting the emphasis on the use of the light. Rabbeinu Yonah is putting his emphasis on the light itself. Right?
Yeah, like there's something metaphysical about the light.
You would think we would have to do some malacha with the light, in the way you said it, Rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
The
seeing of it, I have to see it. Uh-huh. I have to use it. Ah, but you're saying that what I do on Motzei Shabbat, just to use it, I was allowed to do on Shabbat itself. You're right. Hmm.
Yeah. It's not a malacha.
It's not a malacha. Haha. Good point. That's a very good point. Hmm.
You're saying it's not a malacha because we have the light?
Mm-hmm. You're allowed to look at your fingers all Shabbos,
right,
using light.
Right. There's nothing different about
it.
It's not a malacha to use light.
Right.
Rabbi.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I want to suggest that they both hold, Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah, both understanding that if you light it on the Shabbos, then you're not going to be able to use it.
Yeah, but I didn't say that. But Rashi holds like Rabbeinu Yonah, but Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't hold like Rashi. I didn't say that. That's very good. Thank you. Yeah.
So the difference would be then a light that was lit before Shabbos. Going, and if the goy was to use it for
his malacha,
or that for malacha during Shabbos,
then according to Rashi, it's no good. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it is good.
It is good.
Yeah. Okay, so this is an open question. This is quite intriguing. I would think there's something deeper here that we're not discovering.
And there's something about Ner Shel Goy. It's Shabbat is one day out of seven.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Mishnah? So the way we interpret the Mishnah is that any Ner Shel Goy, because of the possibility that it may have been used at one time on Shabbat.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Which is pretty likely.
Yeah.
It's 99%. If a goy has a ner lit on Shabbat, he's probably said lit to do something with it.
Right, okay.
And not just read the newspaper. Okay. So we end with a lot of questions. The one last thing we're going to see is the Yerushalmi. The next piece of paper that you have is Rabbeinu Yonah, and after that is the Yerushalmi. And we'll just remind ourselves of the subject the Yerushalmi is talking about before we see the Yerushalmi, and that'll be it. The Yerushalmi is relating to the same issue that the Bavli related to, which is the matter of the Bisamim Shel Goyim. Why does the first phrase of the Mishnah say that the Bisamim of Goyim are not good? And the answer we gave in the Bavli was because it's been used for Avodah Zarah. Misibat Avodah Zarah. But then the Gemara, the Bavli, said, wait a second, but that's what the third phrase says. says Avodah Zarah. So the answer that the Bavli gave, that there was the third phrase, was an explanation of the first phrase.
Which is very forced.
Which was very forced, we said. The Yerushalmi has a slightly different answer. And it goes like this. You see the brackets there? Lo al haner velo al habisamim shel avodah zarah. That's a quote from the Mishnah, from the third part of the Mishnah. And then the Yerushalmi says, velo hi shel goyim hi shel avodah zarah. Isn't it that goyim is avodah zarah? Aren't they the same thing? Why does it say it twice? The answer is tipater. Tipater is the way the Yerushalmi often introduces a tirutz. Tipater means solution.
It will be solved.
Will be solved. Avodah zarah shel Yisrael. Avodah zarah of Jews. There's two different types of avodah zarah. There's avodah zarah of Jews. There's avodah zarah shel goyim. So the first phrase of the Mishnah said you can't use the nair of avodah zarah of goyim. That's referring. Yeah, the reason is avodah zarah. But the third part of the Mishnah says you can't use the nair of avodah zarah is not explanation of the first. It's a new thing. If a Jew is in avodah zarah with it, then you can't use it either. Is that very satisfying?
It's not a pshat based.
Yeah, usually when we talk about avodah zarah,
right,
especially in the Mishnaic period, we're not talking about Jews. But the Yerushalmi is grasping for straws because the other explanation we know from the Bavli was not so good. So I'm sorry to disappoint everyone. We end up with a lot of questions. I don't have any answers that I didn't tell you.
Professor Abak doesn't have. Does he have?
No, I looked around.
If you just say the first one, the word is goyim.
Yes.
So if you accept that idea, then you can say if it's owned by goyim, don't use it. Why not? We just don't know about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. We just don't know about it. Or if there's something which is now owned by Jews, but had been used for avodah zarah.
Yeah.
But even before. In other words, I don't know if the Yerushalmi text has to mean avodah zarah done by Jews, or it can mean the Jews owned the spices, but they bought them from, they knew it had been used, or you knew somehow that it had been used for avodah zarah. Is that possible?
Look, of course it's possible. We don't have any good answers here. But you want to base what you're saying on the Yerushalmi.
Well, it crossed my mind that just the Mishnah itself,
yeah,
you could do that.
The
Yerushalmi, I just wondered if the Yerushalmi can,
perhaps,
is a support for it.
But in other words, you're basically going in the direction of dividing between ownership and usage?
Yeah, or what had the history of the, right, yes.
Right, so perhaps the first part of the Mishnah that talks about Shel Goyim, that's a matter of ownership.
Yes.
Whereas the third part, which is Avodah Zarah, is a matter of usage.
Yes, that's my idea, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know any better answer. So this just goes to show you that with all the literature, sometimes there are very basic questions that we just don't know the answers to, which reminds me of something that David said a few weeks ago. Right, something we've said many times, that there was a break in tradition, and the Gemara is a valiant effort to try and reconstruct. Sometimes we don't know to what degree it really manages, but sometimes, like in this case, we really feel that there's a lot of things we don't know. Okay.
Thank you.